This is Retirement Talk with Mike Graber from Compass Retirement Advisors. When a part of your financial strategy is out of tune, your long-term goals, your retirement savings, and your legacy can all suffer. With many years of experience in the financial industry, Mike Graber provides his clients and prospects with the information they need regarding Social Security, retirement income planning, wealth management, and much more. Listen in as we address your financial concerns and provide helpful strategies to put you on the path to achieving your retirement goals. And now, here is Retirement Talk with Mike Graber.
Hello, and welcome to this special edition of Retirement Talk with Mike Graber. Tony is off today. We have a real treat for you. Last week, we introduced ESG investing, E for environmental, S for societal, and G for governance. And I think we did a pretty good job of introducing you to what ESG investing is. We pointed out why we feel you should understand it, and we asked you to consider how it impacts your retirement savings decisions. If you missed that introduction show, I encourage you to go back and listen to that in its entirety. Without that intro, it might make it difficult to fully understand and appreciate today's information. So to listen to that intro on ESG investing, go to CompassRetirementAdvisorsLLC.com, click on the radio tab, and you can listen to that show. Or you can go to Apple Play or Spotify, subscribe to Retirement Talk with Mike Graber, and access that and all of our prior shows over the last almost two and a half years now. This week, we're going to be sharing an interview that Jordan Peterson did of Vivek Ramaswamy. They discuss ESG investing. They talk about its impact on the corporate culture and the pressures brought to bear by those who are pushing the ESG agenda. Now, I want to make this very clear. Vivek is a presidential candidate, but my airing this interview between he and Jordan Peterson is in no way an endorsement of his candidacy for president. The key, I think, for all of us is to understand how the ESG movement can potentially impact our savings and our retirement dollars. You know, what are companies that we invest our money in? What are they doing with those dollars? Are they investing in activities that are something we can feel good about? Or should it maybe raise some alarms? And each of us must answer that question for ourselves. If you have any questions or concerns about your retirement portfolio or retirement income strategies, please call me at 812-787-0809. Now, here is a portion of the Jordan Peterson interview of Vivek Ramaswamy. We're going to play about 17 minutes of their hour and 40-minute dialogue. I think this is highly intriguing. It's very deep. And you may want to listen to it a couple of times as I did, just to make sure I was gleaning all the pertinent information. Again, you can do that by going to my website, CompassRetirementAdvisorsLLC.com, click on the radio tab. Now, we're going to join their interview at about the 2-minute mark. So here it is. Stay tuned.
Hi, everybody. I'm very happy today to talk with Vivek Ramaswamy, who has just announced his candidacy for the American presidency and is going to, well, hopefully change the political landscape in doing so. Vivek is an American business leader and New York Times bestselling author of Woke Inc., Inside Corporate America's Social Justice Scam, along with his second book, Nation of Victims, Identity Politics, The Death of Merit, and The Path Back to Excellence. Born and raised in Cincinnati, Ohio, he often recounts the sage advice from his father. If you're going to stand out, then you might as well be outstanding. This set the course for his life. A nationally ranked tennis player, valedictorian of his high school, St. Xavier. He went on to graduate summa cum laude in biology from Harvard and then received his JD from Yale Law School while working at a hedge fund. He then started a biotech company, Roivant Sciences, where he oversaw the development of 5 drugs that became FDA approved. In 2022, this is an important side note, he founded Strive, an Ohio-based asset management firm that directly competes with asset managers like BlackRock, State Street, and Vanguard. who use the money of everyday citizens, that includes you, by the way, to advance environmental and social agendas that many citizens and capital owners disagree with. That's a far more important issue than you might think, and we're going to discuss that a lot as we proceed through our conversation today. Well, hello, Vivek, and everyone watching. It's here on the YouTube platform. It's always good to have everybody's time and attention. Vivek Ramaswamy, who I'm talking to today, is running for president, which seems to be quite the preposterous thing to do for anyone, I would say. This next 2024 election is going to be some interesting contest, as far as I can tell. We're not going to have seen anything like it. And the fact that you threw your hat in the ring, I think, is part and parcel of the whole show. So let's start by just exploring why it is that you decided to do this, and we should do that. Why did you decide to do this? And what is it that you hope to accomplish by making this run? So let's start with why you're doing it.
So you know some of the journey I've been on over the last few years, but I think that's what led me to the doorstep. I've been addressing for the last few years this merger of state power and corporate power that together do what neither can do on its own. And part of me has long believed that the Republican Party in the United States is behind by 40 years, right? Reciting slogans they memorized in 1980 when the real threat to liberty today is different. So I've taken on the woke industrial complex in America through the books I've written, through traveling the country, most recently taking on the ESG movement by starting Strive last year. And that's where my headspace was. I did not think I was going into politics. I thought that I wanted to actually avoid the limiting shackles of partisan politics. It just felt so constraining. I thought of running for the US Senate. I decided not to do that. I said, no. I want to do this independently as an independent voice, thought leader, author. And then, you know, look, I successfully built a biotech company before. Let me put those skills to work by starting Strive. That was where my exclusive focus was going to be. And I'm proud to say, I think we are already having major impact on the market through my work at Strive, and even just through putting a spotlight on the problem. But I got to be really honest about this. And this was the realization that dawned on me after, you know, years into that journey, is that it does take two to tango. Okay. And what I mean by that is the top-down version of this problem, the cynical exploitation of corporate power and state power to shackle the human spirit, I think is only half the issue, because that only works if there's a culture that's really willing to buy it up. It only works if there's a populace that's buying up what they're selling. And to me, I think that requires every one of us to look deeply in the mirror and ask ourselves, what is it about us as a people that wants us to bend the knee, or that makes us want to bend the knee to the powers that be, that wants us to embrace these new secular religions? And that wasn't quite a problem that I was going to be able to address even through market action and taking on BlackRock or the ESG forces in capital markets. And that's really what, when it dawned on me that there was no better way to drive a cultural revival in America than to successfully, and successfully is an important part of this, but then to successfully run for president. And the whole premise of my campaign is actually to define a national identity. Answer the question of what it means to be an American in the year 2023. I do not believe we have a good answer to that question in this country. I'm on a mission to deliver an answer to that question. And my basic premise here is that our absence of that answer, that is the black hole at the center of our nation's soul. That is what allows wokeism and gender ideology and climatism and COVIDism to fill the void. These are secular religions that prey on that vacuum. If we can fill that vacuum with, say, a vision of national identity that runs so deep that it dilutes these other agendas to irrelevance, that is how we win. And I believe that there isn't a candidate in this field, I believe, who's quite up to that challenge. I'm not sure I am either, but I do believe that I'm going to give it the best shot that we have, which is why I'm running.
Okay, well, you brought up a lot of very complex issues in that description of your motives. And so I'm going to walk through them one by one to unpack them for everybody. Because, you know, you said the Republicans are 40 years behind. And I think that's probably true of organizations like the UN as well. And 40 years is a long time, given how much has changed in the last 10 years. And what that means is that the average person who's watching and listening to this is also behind and isn't even aware of what acronyms like ESG mean or why they should really give a damn. Mm-hmm. I just interviewed the CEO of the National, what's the organization? State Treasurer's Organization.
Ah.
It's a financial officer's organization. Yeah, there's 28 states.
Yeah, I know them. I know them, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they're pushing hard back against the ESG movement. But, you know, we talked about in that podcast the fact that people don't even know what the hell that means. Now, you opened your description. Essentially, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but from my perspective, you opened your description of your motives with a statement about what essentially boils down to a kind of fascist collusion. And what we're seeing is an amalgam of power that's corporate, which of course the left-wingers complain about, that's government, which the right-wingers complain about, and then of media, which everybody complains about, and rightly so. And there's this idea that seems to be reigning in the upper echelons of the power structures that we're facing an apocalyptic emergency of such magnitude, whatever the emergency happens to be, that they should be conveniently ceded all the power. And one of the fronts upon which that battle is being fought is the ESG movement. And so do you want to walk through that for everyone, just to bring them up to date?
Absolutely. I mean, this has been something of my obsession over the last several years, and not just as a commentator, but as a doer and as an entrepreneur too. So the issue with the ESG movement, it stands for environmental, social, and governance factors. It's designed to sound boring for a reason. My general rule of thumb is if it sounds like a three-letter acronym that bores you, that's a good sign that you should be paying more attention because it was designed to bore you. What this whole game is about is using private power, using capital markets to accomplish through the back door what government could not get done through the front door under the Constitution. So I'll tell you what it is, and then I'll walk through the history of how we got there, because that's also pretty important too. What the essence of the ESG movement is, what it does is it uses the money of everyday citizens, Americans, but Canadians too, Australians and Western Europeans. It uses the money of everyday citizens to invest in companies and to vote their shares in ways that advance one-sided progressive agendas, environmental and social agendas, that most of those people do not agree with, that most of those people did not know were actually being advanced with their own money, and which don't advance the financial best interests of most people whose money is actually used. So what does that mean? Think about yourself saving in a retirement account or a 401k account or a brokerage account. You think that the person who's managing that money is exclusively looking after your best financial interests. It turns out they're not. They're also looking after advancing these other environmental and social goals. Who are these institutions? They're asset management firms like BlackRock or State Street or Vanguard or Invesco or countless others that have signed a pledge to say that they're going to align all of their underlying companies with the goals of the Paris Climate Accords, with net zero standards by 2050, with modern diversity, equity, and inclusion standards. And those three or four firms alone manage about $20 trillion, maybe even a little bit more. That's more than the US GDP right now in the hands of three to four financial institutions. But they're not using their money to do it. They're using the money of probably most listeners to this exchange right now, people watching this. Good chances that their money, their retirement accounts, their brokerage accounts are being used to tell companies like Apple to adopt racial equity audits that Apple's board initially did not want to adopt, to tell companies like Chevron to adopt scope 3 emissions caps, which I can talk about what that means, but that Chevron did not want to adopt, and that most people watching this probably didn't want to force on Chevron either, but their money was used to do it anyway. That's what this ESG movement is all about. So how did we get here is actually a really important question. And a lot of this began, there were two big milestones seeing the supercharging of this ESG movement in our economy and in capital markets. The first one, which I think of as the big bang that really set the whole thing for all intents and purposes into motion, was the 2008 financial crisis. What happened in the 2008 financial crisis, and by the way, I had a front row seat to this. I got my first job in New York at an elite hedge fund in the fall of 2007. You know, the fund I worked at got an honorable mention in Michael Lewis's book, The Big Short. This is my first job out of college. So this is fun stuff for me, right? A lot of people lost a lot of money on Wall Street. I didn't have any money, so it didn't matter to me. It was more of a learning experience, which was a pretty rich one. But I had a front row seat. What happened was, in the aftermath of the 08 crisis, Republicans, it's worth remembering this, Republicans in this country bailed out the big banks, which I don't know what your view is, Dr. Peterson. I view that as a major mistake. It's a cardinal sin. The Bush administration and Hank Paulson, a CEO, an alumnus of Goldman Sachs, used public taxpayer funds to bail out Goldman Sachs while letting his competitors fail. This was crony capitalism all the way down. And the left actually had a point in this country. Occupy Wall Street was born. And what they said is, look, if you're going to play that crony capitalist game, then you know what? We're going to play our game. We're just going to take money from your wealthy corporate fat cat pockets and redistribute it to poor people to help poor people. Because that's what we on the far left want to do on the Occupy Wall Street movement. But right around that time, there was a fissure in the left-wing movement in this country where there was the birth of this new, let's call it the woke left. Barack Obama had just been elected the first black president of the United States. There was a lot of cultural currents in the US that said, well, wait a minute there. The real problem isn't quite economic injustice or poverty. It's really racial injustice and misogyny and bigotry. And by the way, climate change. This is post Al Gore's Inconvenient Truth. This actually presented the opportunity of a generation for Wall Street to say that, no, okay, guys, we'll make a deal with you. We will use our corporate power, use our money, really your money, to applaud diversity and inclusion, to put token minorities on corporate boards, to muse about this racially disparate impact of climate change from the mountaintops of Davos after flying there in a private jet. We'll do all of these things. But we don't do it for free. We expect the new left to look the other way when it comes to leaving our corporate power intact. And so they defanged Occupy Wall Street. Most people don't even remember what Occupy Wall Street is. It went by the wayside. And that's how the birth of this new, what I've sometimes called woke industrial or ESG industrial complex was born, where Wall Street said that, you know what, if you can't beat us, join us. And that's exactly what happened. So that was the first big event.
Do you think it was that conscious? Do you think that was the consequence of 1,000 micro decisions? You know, I mean, were there...
The latter.
It's easy to see us. Okay, the latter.
It was the latter, yeah. I mean, this is not a smoke-filled room where there was some sort of meeting in the back of Goldman Sachs' boardroom on 85 Broad Street in Lower Manhattan. No, this isn't, and that's like the classical conspiracy theory. This isn't a conspiracy theory. It's just emergent reality, right? You watch it in slow motion. People need to understand when they think about what a conspiracy theory is that turns into reality. It's that if you just watch the camera reel in slow motion, it plays out in dangerously boring form. This is how the sausage gets made. So anyway, that was the first catalyst. And so what began as a challenge to the system, which is, you know, as an intellectual or whatever, I always enjoy it, if I agree it or not. It's at least interesting to watch. Something that began as a challenge to the system, stakeholder capitalism and ESG, slowly became ossified as the system. And there's a lot of forces behind that. The rise of passive index funds played a big role, and that's a discussion I can get into another time or maybe later in this discussion. But a big then catalyst came out there was two big catalysts that came out. One was in 2016 and one was in 2018. The thing that happened in 2016, of course, is that Donald Trump was elected president of the United States. This created a seismic shockwave across the establishment class, both in capital markets, as well as the linkage between business and politics. And what they said is, okay, wait a minute. This game may not be played the way it's supposed to be going forward. If political leaders like Donald Trump are going to break the system, then we, the business leaders, need to exercise our authority to step into the void instead. And then they were vindicated, or so they thought, when Trump pulled out of the Paris Climate Accords in 2018. Not a lot of people realize this. That was a big event. That is the event that threw kerosene on this ESG storm. And you know, even the people who are complaining about this ESG movement need to understand where it came from a little bit better than they do. This was a big deal. So this is what then caused CalPERS, the California Teachers and Pension Retirement System, and other big allocators, the people who give BlackRock and State Street your money. They started to say that, look, if political leaders are not going to step up to the occasion to address the existential challenges we face, like global climate change, then business leaders need to do it instead. Larry Fink, the CEO of BlackRock, started saying similar things, that we have to earn our social license to operate. And that's really what caused this ESG thing to spread like wildfire, was that event of pulling out of the Paris Climate Accords.
Well, there you have the explanation and the valuable insights as to what's going on within the ESG movement and its philosophy. As Peterson and Ramaswamy say, it boils down to this. If the powers that be can't get their political leaders to do their bidding, then the business leaders must step in and use their companies to implement their social agendas. And the key is, I think, do those social agendas align with yours and mine? You know, within your mutual funds that you own, within the 401k allocations that you have, you know, you're a shareholder of those companies where your money is invested. And we play a role in those social agendas by allowing our shareholder votes to be cast by the investment managers. You know, we sign proxy statements that let them vote our shares. And my goal today is simply to bring awareness to this issue and ask you to be curious, you know, what is your money doing? You know, what are the companies that you own within your investments doing with your shareholder votes? And I've got a little quick analogy here for you as we wrap up today's show. You know, there's been a lot of coal mining and power plants in southern Indiana over the years. And many of those employees, you know, the everyday worker, they have owned mutual funds, IRAs. They've had allocations in those company-sponsored 401k plans. And with all of those investments, those workers own shares of companies within those plans that were likely wanting to shut down the fossil fuel industry. Now, that's quite a contradiction to own and profit from a company involved in activities that are trying to shut down your way of life. Now, remember, last week we mentioned the European energy crisis that was sparked by the ESG movement. You know, last winter there was talk of people freezing to death because they didn't have enough gasoline and oil, home heating oil to heat things up over there. But a lot of that was brought about by the ESG movement wanting to shut down the fossil fuel industry. And, you know, it's just something that we don't hear many people talking about in the investment world. You know, the fossil fuel example I'm using right now, this is just one of many, many examples I could point out. But I think people in Southwest Indiana understand the impact the coal industry has had, you know, on jobs and leading to wealth here in Southwestern Indiana. So I thought that was a good point to bring up. Well, I hope that you know a little more today about this issue and that you'll do some homework on your own. You know, ask questions about how your funds are being used, especially if you own stock, if you own equities, individually or within mutual funds or within 401k plans. So we're out of time for today. If you have concerns about how your investment dollars are allocated, questions about your retirement income plans, then please call me, Mike Graber at Compass Retirement Advisors, 812-787-0809. Join us again next week. We're going to continue this conversation about knowing what your money's doing within your investment portfolios. Again, thank you for joining us. Tell your friends and family about us, and we look forward to you joining us again here next week for another edition of Retirement Talk with Mike Graber. Have a great day, everybody. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Retirement Talk. Don't pay too much for taxes or retire without a sound income plan. For more information, contact Mike Graber at Compass Retirement Advisors. Call 812-787-0809 or visit them online at CompassRetirementAdvisorsLLC.com. Investment advisory services provided by Creative One Wealth LLC, a registered investment advisor. Compass Retirement Advisors LLC, The Insurance Shop Inc., and Creative One Wealth LLC are unaffiliated entities. Mike Graber and Compass Retirement Advisors are not affiliated with or endorsed by the Social Security Administration or any government agency. Provided content is for overview and informational purposes only and is not intended and should not be relied upon as individualized tax, legal fiduciary, or investment advice. Each individual situation will vary and opinions expressed here may not apply to everyone. Illustrations given are hypothetical examples and provided of illustrations.
illustrative purposes only. It does not represent real-life scenarios. Materials presented are believed to be from reliable sources, and no representation can be made to its accuracy. All ideas and information should be discussed in detail with one of our qualified representatives prior to implementation. The information contained herein is based on our understanding of current tax law. Tax and legislative information may be subject to change and different interpretations. We recommend that you seek professional legal advice for applicability to your personal information.